Hi everybody, my name is Tony and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Tony!
I remember when I got sober first, I got sober in Belfast and it was a big meeting. It was a big meeting and there was a top table where people used to speak, and I thought, my God, I never do that. I never stand up there and tell my story. And today it's a great privilege to be asked, and I'm very grateful to this committee who asked me to speak here this evening. Our big book suggests that I tell you what it used to be like and what happened and what it's like for me today, and I try to do that within the 20 minutes that they have allocated to me. I think it's awfully cruel to ask an alcoholic to only talk 20 minutes. I try to do that as best I can. As I said, I grew up in Belfast, or outside Belfast. I was a middle child. My father was a drinking alcoholic for many years. In the early 60s, he went to a doctor and he told him, you're an alcoholic, you need treatment. And he, for the next, up until 1978, he was in and out of treatment centres, and he was a binge drinker. And my mother, around the same time, discovered Al-Anon. And until the day she died, she was an active and grateful member of Al-Anon. And we thank God for that fellowship. And I'm delighted that there's an Al-Anon speaker here this evening. So I grew up knowing a whole lot about alcoholism. And I grew up believing that I would not be an alcoholic, and that the knowledge that I had. And my mother had brought in recovery to our family. And when my father got sober, we would go to open meetings with them. So I knew a whole lot about this disease. And growing up, I also knew that I was different. I never fitted in. I always felt, I describe it as you know, if there was a gang of fellas in the playground in school, they'd be having great fun, and I would try to be a part of that. And then you guys were having much better fun over there, and I would manipulate my way into that. And then I'd find you guys, and I was never content with what I had. And I always felt that I was different. And I was a middle child. I have a brother and sister older, a brother and sister younger. And I always was trying to find something different. I never had contentment. When I had my first drink, I didn't get drunk. Myself, I have a brother who's just a year older than me, and he and I would nip some of the Guinness from the drinks cabinet or some whiskey, and we thought it was disgusting, and we'd laugh at it. And when we were in our teens, we would have cider in the park and have some harp. I thought, harp, anybody Irish? Do you know harp? They're still selling it, apparently. When I was 18, my parents were in business, and the troubles were running riot in Belfast. Running riot, of course they were, around Belfast. And my father decided to buy a small hotel in Donegal, which is the northwest of Ireland. It was in a summer place, summer resort, and it was kind of if ever he needed to, or the family needed to escape, we would go there. But it was a small hotel, and I was in charge of the bar. And my father's an alcoholic, and he bought a pub. I mean, anyway, it was there that my daily drinking started. I started drinking every day, and continued to do that for a number of years. A summer resort, and so I was able to go back, and I went to college, and I ended up marrying a girl. We'd been together when we were about 15, and I'd break up with her, and then I'd say, well, I need her to make me content, and I'd get back with her, and then I'd say, well, I need to get away from her because I find contentment somewhere else. And we ended up, at 23, I married this girl, and I used to say to my parents, what the hell were you thinking of letting me marry at 23 years of age? But ours was the sixth or seventh marriage I went to that year. Oh, we did it back then, and we got married early, and we married young. And I thought this girl would give me contentment, and I was so wrong on so many levels. This girl was not going to give me contentment. We were 2 years married, and she said, "We have a problem, and it's you, and it's your drinking." And I went to speak to a man who was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, who kind of first cousin of my mother's. And because my father was sober at this stage, and I was certainly not going to talk to him about it. And this guy, he and I talked for a couple of hours, and he said, "Tony, I think you're an alcoholic. I think you should stop drinking and go to Alcoholics Anonymous." I was 25. And my question was, how the hell can you be an alcoholic at 25? And I thought I was far too young, and I thought I knew enough about it to not be an alcoholic. But I wanted this marriage to last, and so I stopped drinking, but didn't go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And over the next 2 years, without drinking, I realized that the problem was my wife. at so many levels.
Of course.
And if I could get rid of her, I'd be all right. And what I was coming to see, what I was beginning to realize, was that I was gay, and this marriage was so wrong. It was so wrong for me, and it was so wrong for her. And I thought, if I can get rid of her, I can go out, I can go to, I was going to say the gay bars, but the gay bars, there's only one in Belfast at that time. And I'd be fine, I'd get that contentment. And that's what I did. I'm not proud when I say this, but I manipulated my way out of that marriage so that my wife would look worse than I did. And one of the greatest gifts, one of the greatest gifts that I got in recovery was being able to go to make an amends to that woman some years later and to ask her forgiveness for the harm that I had caused her. But manipulating my way out, I did, and I started drinking. And for the next 3 years, I drank every day. Most days I got drunk. I was out in the countryside, out near Lisburn, out in Lorgan, Myra actually, and I was with some friends, and I woke up. I would have told you initially in AA that I never had blackouts, but I woke up in my bed beside a woman who I knew. Scary place for me to wake up beside a woman in a bed. And she woke up and said, "Tony, you're a mess. You're an absolute mess, and you're a disgrace." And I thought, "Oh, God, what do I do again?" And my friends came in who owned the house, and they said, "We think you're in real trouble with booze. You should go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's time for you to go." And I went to AA and Lisburn Road in Belfast, the first group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Northern Ireland, and only the second in Ireland. So there was a long tradition of recovery. And I went to a man that I knew who was a member of that group came and talked to me. And thank God for good 12-steppers. This man knew how to do a good 12-step. And he came to my flat and told me his story. And told me he was a young man. And he told me that he knew he was an alcoholic when he was in his 20s. And I thought I was 29 at this stage. And I still thought I was too young. But I went along to the meeting with him on Lisburn Road. And he... there was a woman speaking called Dorothy. I'll never forget her. Wee Dorothy, we called her. And she told her story. And I thought, I had such identification with everything that she said. I didn't like those steps. I went through every one of them, and I could tell you why they didn't apply to me. I knew I was in trouble with drink. I wasn't unmanageable. I didn't have any insanity. I was Northern Ireland Catholic. Me and God were fine. I didn't need any of that stuff. And I used up confessions, and I didn't really think I had any defects of character, and I hadn't harmed anybody, so why did I have to do those steps? So I was out and drank again with attitudes like that. And I drank, and I came back in again. I would drink at the weekend, I'd come back in again on Monday, and I would drink again, and I'd come back. And I met a woman one time, and she said to me, over the river for grass, she said, "Do you think you're special and different that you can't get sober and stay sober like the rest of us?" And I said, "Well, actually, I am special and different, and let me tell you why." So I told her that I was gay and that I really couldn't identify with all you people. And she called a guy over and she said, "You going to that Tuesday night meeting that you go to?" And he said, "Yeah." And she said, "Here's one, another one for your group, and take him with you, for God's sake." And I went to an LGBT meeting in Belfast that night, and there were six other sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought, if they can do it, surely I can. And they told me at the beginning to get a sponsor and work the steps. And they said things like, you know, look at the slogan, stick with the winners, do these things and miracles will happen. I got all that kind of advice and that information. And I said to this woman who had directed me to that fellow that Tuesday, I said to her, "Would you be my sponsor and would you take me through the steps?" She said, I'll talk to you about it and we'll see if we can do that. And I said, "Well, I can come out to your place this weekend and we can do those steps if you want." And she said, "Well, let's talk about the first one and see what happens after that." And that's what we did. And of course, it took me many months to go through those steps. And thank God for good sponsors. I can't imagine trying to do this without a sponsor. I can't imagine. I have a brother in the fellowship. My younger brother came in 25 years ago. And he tells the story. Somebody said to him one time, "You know, if you're listening to only yourself, you're listening to a fool." Yeah, a sponsor. So thank God for good sponsors. And this woman took me through the steps, and she explained to me what each step meant to her, how she worked that step in her life. And she had what I wanted. And that's what we did. I got a great grounding in that in AA at that time, and I'm always grateful to her. She died some years ago, and I was the executor of her will, and I was able to give back something to her when she had passed away. I went to live in London. I got great AA in London there too. And in 1990, I went to live in Boston, in Massachusetts, and I'd been to the States several times and thought, AA in America is just amazing, and I was really grateful for that. I lived then for 2 years in Cleveland, Ohio, and I was talking to some people earlier and advising them, if you ever get the chance, get to Akron for Founders Day weekend. It's one of the most amazing gifts that I ever had. And you know, I don't know whether any of you ever heard of what they talk in AA about your second stage recovery. It usually happens after 5 or 6 or 7 or maybe 10 years of sobriety. I got my second stage recovery in Ohio, and I'm so grateful that I had those 2 years that I had living in Ohio. I made friends there. That are still friends. Yeah, I get back every 5 or 6 years to visit them. Of course, we're all older now. Some of them have died, but they're still sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous there. I came back to Ireland to live. I had a 3-year visa in America, and that 3-year visa finished. And I had to come home, and I did, and I got a job in Dublin. And I worked there for a number of years, and I moved south of Dublin. I worked always in charities, and I was into private practice about 20 years ago and set up my own business. I met a man, I didn't say 17, but I think 18 years. He's not here, it's okay. 18 years ago. Anyway, he and I married when marriage became available in the Republic of Ireland, and I've been living very happy ever since. What it's like for me today is it's a life beyond my wildest dreams. I listen, some days it's, you know, God who and what program, some days it's shite. You know, some days I think, you know, it's mad. But I, you know, the other thing about living sober is you can stop. At any time of the day I can stop and I can start over again. At any time of the day I can stop and say my third step prayer again and start it all over again. And you know, this has come about slowly and painfully sometimes. Sometimes it's been a real hard thing. Anybody tells you living sober is easy and great, they're lying. It's not easy. Sometimes living sober is awful. Sometimes living sober is very, very hard. But my worst day in sobriety is better than my best day when I was drinking. And some days I forget what got me sober, what keeps me sober. What keeps me sober today is doing those things that were suggested to me all those years ago. Go to meetings, talk to another alcoholic, do some service, read some literature. And I'm 39 years sober, and 39 years I've been reading some literature, I've been talking to another alcoholic, I've been talking to God every day. That still works, and it's quite simple, and it's very easy if I remember to do it one day at a time. I can live one day at a time, and just by keeping doing those things that I did back in those days. I've gone through the program, I've gone through the steps several times. I had a sponsor one time in London, he was an American. I thought he had such an understanding of this program, of these steps, and I asked him to take me through them. And one of the things that he used to talk about was that the sixth and seventh step were some of the most important steps in our program. And that the sixth and seventh, we sometimes skip over, there's two paragraphs in the big book of sixth and seventh step. And he used to say, and I still believe it, that the sixth and seventh steps are those steps that enable us to grow towards and to become like that which we think about. We can become whatever we want to do and whatever we want to be if we work those two steps. I think they're really... Listen, I'd love another hour here, and I will talk you through all 12 steps and why they are all so important and what each and every one of them mean to me. I got sober because of them. I got sober because of this fellowship. I got sober because of people like yourselves and who shared your stories and your stuff with me. I learned through other people's experience, strength and hope. And I hope that over this weekend we will all learn through other people's experience, strength and hope as well. I'm going to stop there. I'm conscious that, you know, it's this program is great. This program is what kept me alive. My father died. He was almost 30 years sober. He died a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was so proud of that. My brother came in 25 years ago, and he was secretary of the local meeting in County Down. And he asked me to come up from Dublin to speak at the meeting, and my father was there at the meeting. And I could see my father with tears dripping down his face. And he said that he was so proud to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous and to have two sons who were active members and sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm very proud to be a sober member of AA, and I'm very proud to be here this evening. I could talk for another hour, but I'm really grateful, and thank you all very much for listening to me. Thank you for the opportunity.